Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 640th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein, giving you American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. Get your daily reading from me and other writers over at Beyond the 90 at beyondthe90.substack.com and locally on the New York Red Bulls at ajmsportsfc.com. Talking about the New York Red Bulls. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. Copa America is going on right now, and we're having some fun here right now. Currently, Canada leading Peru by a goal to nil. Of course, Peru is down a man on a changing of a card from yellow to red on a horrible challenge against Jacob Schaffelberg. And of course, Jonathan David making it 1-0. They are in second half stoppage time right now in the fourth minute in seven of second half stoppage time. And we saw Maxime Crepeau make a huge save to keep this one goal lead for Canada. If they can hold on, then they will have a better chance to get out of this group than either Peru or Chile. But we'll see what happens down the road. And as we get ready, of course, with what's been going on in the Copa America. It's been great to watch. Great victory. Really a good victory, I should say, for the USA against Bolivia. There should have been more goals unless Pepe converted a hat-trick, if he should have. But once again, Bolivia's keeper, Bruckner, he was able to make those big saves to keep the USA from adding on more than just the two goals that they did from both Christian Pulisic and Falaron Balogun. So that's been one of those things. But, you know, as we find out later on, earlier this afternoon, the U.S. Soccer Federation already informing us about upcoming friendlies in September and October against opponents where, okay, look, no, it's not ideal to continue to keep playing against CONCACAF opponents. And it's not ideal to play these opponents from other confederations. And once again, it's New Zealand will be one of the three opponents, along with Canada and Panama. And all you can say is, why? Why is it always these types of opponents? Now, let me be fair here to U.S. soccer, as I want to be fair here. Now, obviously, it would be nice play oppositions from other confederations like CONMEBOL and UEFA. Here's the problem. In September, October, November, CONMEBOL will be playing World Cup qualifiers, so that's out. You want to play against national teams from UEFA. Well, that's also a problem. Because why? Because of the UEFA Nations League, they'll be playing against themselves in these types of matches. And unfortunately, that's out. So in the reality of the situation, you have these matchups against not only CONCACAF nations in Panama and Canada, but also with New Zealand, which is an Oceania confederation. Look, the last time they played New Zealand, it wasn't a good game. In fact, I think it was either a scoreless draw or it was a 1-1 draw. I know, I remember being a draw. I just don't remember if it was a scoreless draw or a 1-1 draw. But the point is this. Our players have to play somebody. And, you know, when it comes to these games, and once again, it's going to be on September the 7th against Canada back at Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, Kansas. And on September the 10th against New Zealand at TQL Stadium in Cincinnati. And then, of course, you're going to take on Panama October the 12th over at the Q2 in Austin. We don't know who will be their next opponent that other match day for the United States. But one thing is for sure. Look, the U.S. needs opponents. And as of right now, that's what it is. And final score now, final whistle blows. Canada defeating Peru, 10-men Peru, by a final of a goal to nil. So that's fantastic to see. And Canada now officially in second place in the group. And we'll see what they'll do in their final group stage match against Chile. But obviously, that's a big moment for them. Big, big moment for them and for Canadian soccer. And congratulations to Jesse Marsh, the American head coach for Canada. 1-0, his first victory as the head coach of the Canadian men's national team head coach. Great for him. Great stuff from him. But once again, as I've said already, you know, this is a situation where there's nothing you can do. If this UEFA Nations League was not around, then the United States would have had at least a friendly against an Italy, against Germany, against maybe France, against maybe England, Ireland, or Scotland, or Northern Ireland, or even the Dutch, the Polish, the Swedes. That could have happened. But because of this UEFA Nations League, and the truth is, in reality, UEFA Nations League, I mean, they don't really need this type of competition. Only CONCACAF. Only CONCACAF. They deserve to have these types of opponents during these late windows when you are not having any World Cup qualifying, especially for the U.S. and Canada and Mexico. But unfortunately, that's what it is. That's what we have. And, you know, what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do. You're just going to have to sit there and take it and accept that these will be the opponents for the U.S. this coming fall. This coming September and October. And don't forget, November will be the two-legged matchups, depending on who they will face after Group A play in League A group, League A play in the CONCACAF Nations League coming up this coming fall as well. So, you know, I understand if some of you are thinking, oh no, not this again. Why are we playing these opponents again? Why are we playing these CONCACAF opponents again? And why are we playing New Zealand? That's why. The method to the madness, ladies and gentlemen, the method to the madness. We cannot play a CONMEBOL team again because of their World Cup qualifying campaign. And we cannot play any European clubs or European teams because of the UEFA Nations League. That's the situation we have. I know you don't like it. I don't like it either. But this is the reality of the current situation that we have in this game. And the current reality and the current situation of why the U.S. currently is not playing higher-ranked sides and higher opponents. We got a taste of it against Colombia and Brazil in the international window of earlier in this month. Now we have the Copa America, and they're going to face a stingy Panama side. Listen, you got to give Panama some credit here. And the only reason why I say this is because their head coach in Thomas Christensen has done wonders for the Panamanian men's national team. For the Canal Boys, he's gotten them to be a lot more structured. He's gotten them to play compact. He's gotten them to play strong and doing an excellent job. That's what it is. And that's what you have to be aware of. Because if you're not going to be aware of it, well, then you're lost. It's not just always playing these top nations in South America and in Europe. It is also what you need to understand, what it's also facing these competitions against some of these stronger teams or mid-level teams within our own confederation. And I know some of you don't want to hear it. And trust me, I don't want to keep on repeating it. But the truth of the matter is this. This is where we are. I know you don't like it. Believe me, there are times I don't like it either. But it has to be said, we got to play these teams. And if we don't play these teams, well then, you know, once this World Cup has come and gone, well, these are the teams you got to battle against, not only in the Gold Cup, but when World Cup qualifying returns for the USA when it's the 2030 cycle. This is what has to happen. You don't like it, I understand it, but this is why it happens. This is why we are where we are. Trust me, I want to be playing better opponents. But once again, UEFA killed that off when they created their Nations League. And also, don't forget, they got to do Euro Cup qualifying when it's a non-UEFA Nations League year, and then World Cup qualifying, which will be next fall as well. So depending on what's going on, depending on, you know, who you're going to get scheduled against, who's available, UEFA killed that off. They just killed it off. Now for them, during international cycle, whether it be European Cup qualifying, World Cup qualifying, the UEFA Nations League has killed that off. It's gone. It's dead. It's over. And once again, there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing U.S. soccer can do about it. Sure, I would love to play England again in a friendly. I would love to see them come back over here to the States and play us in a friendly, or go to Wembley and play them over there in a friendly. But it's not going to happen anymore. That's over and done with. The only time you're going to probably see England, either we're drawn in the same group stage, or if we somehow play them in a knockout stage in a World Cup, that's the only time it's going to happen. And always remember this when you play England, and every time the English tries to, say, oh, watch, we're going to destroy you this time, and you just have to tell them, why is it you can only beat us in friendlies? So, hey, that's all I can tell. That's all I can say with you guys, you know. Got to find a way to get it done. Got to find a way to absolutely get it right and have some fun. But still, though, I don't like it, and I understand why you guys feel like this. But this is, unfortunately, the reality of the current state of international soccer, of international football. We're not going to get the big-name teams either going to their place or for them to come to our place. It's not going to happen. Okay? Maybe those June international windows, it's a possibility. But until we get there, we'll have to wait and see what the situations will unfold for us and for our men's national team. So we'll see, wait and see what happens over there. And like I said, I don't like it as much as you guys do, but we have no choice. It's out of our control. UEFA does whatever they will do. CONMEBOL will do whatever they got to do. And once again, CONCACAF has to do what they have to do. That's the truth. And if you don't want to understand it, look, and I can't help you, but that's the situation. And it's not just against us. It's also Canada's issues and Mexico's issues. Costa Rica as well, Panama as well. The top-rated teams and the middle-rated teams, they're going to have the same issues that we're going to have, and that's the problem as we're getting ready for this. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get on with the show. Join me tonight. This gentleman covering the New England Revolution for the Blazing Musket, he's back with us from a long vacation. But you know what? I'm glad he needed the rest anyway. Sam Minton joining me tonight. Sam, good evening. Welcome back, and how are you?
Doing good, Dan. Doing good. I was lucky enough to witness Sam Uys coach her first game up in Vermont as a head coach for the Vermont Green women's side. But also, the Newman Revolution have come back from the dead, if you will. They're on quite the hot run.
How in the hell did that happen? I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I'm happy for Revolution supporters. I'm happy for that the Revs finally found a way to turn things around. But I'll be fair and honest. I thought Caleb Porter was dead on arrival after the Champions Cup run they had.
Yeah, it's really kind of stunning to see just what this team has become. I would definitely say a lot of it, especially as of late, if you look at the Vancouver game and then obviously the most recent match against FC Cincy. I think a lot of it is credit to Giacomo Rioni just being able to find the back of the net. This is a striker who's struggled a lot throughout his career, struggled a lot with consistency, but he seems like he fit a bit of a purple patch in front of nets. So if he's able to keep scoring, I really think the Revolution can climb their way up the Eastern Conference. But then also to the acquisitions of Alhaz Ivicic and Xavier Arriaga have been crucial for the team. Really, both of those guys have added some quality that the team has been missing, especially Ivicic. You know, Henrik Rabes got a rough start to his MLS career, and I think bringing in someone who knows the league like Ivicic, who's been able to perform well in this league, clearly has made quite the difference.
Now, obviously, the return of Bajrak Tarevic, I think, has been another plus for the Revolution coming back from, I would believe, he was on international duty. Now, as I understand it, he may not choose the USA. He may choose, I guess, Bosnia. You can help me with that.
Yeah, so he was on international duty with the U.S. Olympic squad. And Brian Scarietta reported, you know, someone who definitely within the youth kind of setups is very well-tuned, mentioned that there's kind of some rumblings that Esmir Baratarevic could switch over to Bosnia. Obviously, it seems like comparing with the U.S., where he's mostly been involved in the youth setup, you know, he was able to get capped in January. If he was to commit to play to Bosnia, he would get almost instant playing time. I would imagine, you know, he would earn follow-ups and be someone who could feature for their senior national team, whereas with the U.S. men's national team, that likely isn't the case, but it's definitely been great for the Revolution having him back. It's kind of interesting because, you know, you have injuries to, you know, some guys like Dylan Barrero, Thomas Shankalai, and, you know, looking more long-term, Nacho Heal. And it almost seems like Caleb Porter's kind of had his hand a bit forced and he's had to give the youngster a run out. And, you know, whenever he does come out, he's able to be a real impactful player. He obviously has that skill on the ball. There's some decision-making that still needs to be improved, and obviously that comes with time and experience. But it's going to be interesting to see on the international side where he ends up deciding to play, if he makes that one-time switch or sticks with the United States. But so far, you know, club-wise, I think he's had a real big year and has really kind of improved overall as a player.
What has this backline been like? I mean, we know it's been Swiss cheese for the last couple of games until this recent stretch. Did they finally have like some sort of a closed-door meeting? They finally just come together and say, listen, we got to stop beating ourselves, you know, hitting our heads against the wall. We got to play like we did, like they did last year and the year before that. You know, I mean, let's be honest. The Revolution was such a well-oiled machine 2 years ago, and of course going into last year, they were doing the same thing until the whole shenanigan situation happened with Bruce Arena. Did someone finally just say, listen, let's not put our heads in the sand, but let's just put our heads down and rumble through and let's get some wins going?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a mixture of a lot of things. I think when you look at specifically kind of the back line, especially the center back duo, Henry Kessler ended up having to miss a match, and when he missed the match, Dave Romney stepped in and he took advantage. You know, he was great in the back line with Arriaga, and so far that seems like it's going to be the back line, you know, the center back pairing moving forward. Also, the Revolution are getting guys healthy. You have Brandon Baad make his season debut after his injury that he's been dealing with long-term, similar to Dylan Barrero. So it's going to be big having both Brandon Bye and DeJuan Jones on the wings, obviously, when Bye is 90 minutes fit. But again, I really do have to kind of go back to Ivicic. I think he's kind of been really crucial in terms of being able to make some big saves. You know, he's had some kind of questionable ones where, especially against Vancouver, he's caught a bit flat-footed. But I think overall, he's really been a boost to the Revolution. And when you look at the success of the Revolution in previous seasons, you had, you know, elite goal being in terms of Matt Turner and Georgi Petrovic. Seems like with Ravis, they kind of regress to the mean, kind of, you know, this is what life is like with an average goalkeeper, a goalkeeper who isn't going to win you games, but, you know, occasionally make a great save. But Ivicic has been able to really help the Revolution get some points and, you know, turn some draws or losses into some wins.
They're very true there. I have to also say that one player I would like to give credit to, and I think he's also been a part of it, whether he's starting or he's coming off the bench, and that is Emmanuel Boateng. I think he's been crucial in some of these moments as well, especially one or two games where he's come off the bench and he slipped in a goal like you never thought was going to happen, and then he converts one. What's he been like for this club during this resurgence?
Yeah, I think he's kind of been someone, especially during those injuries, that he can come in, be a starter, and really make an impact. Obviously, he has that speed and pace out on the wing, and especially when he comes off the bench, it's just he's the definition of a super sub, and he's able to kind of make an impact and change the game in the blink of an eye. But definitely stepping into the starting 11, you know, with Dylan Barrero dealing with a hip injury, you know, I think he's been great. And, you know, to have a veteran presence like that, you know, who's been through the ups and downs of an MLS season, I think is very important. And obviously it seems to be paying off with how he's been playing as of late.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So looking at the standings right now in the East and, isn't it funny? The same old basement team, the Chicago Fire, as they have replaced the Revolution at the bottom of the East. And still, though, I was ready to leave them for dead, the Revs, and then here they come, and now they're tied for 12th place with DC United and only a point behind the Union, shockingly in 11th, 3 points behind Orlando, and also 3 points behind Atlanta for that wild card spot. I mean, look, they're on a good roll. They're doing exceptionally well at this point in time. What do you think they need to do to continue on with this run here, Sam?
Yeah, I think, you know, this upcoming transfer window is going to be crucial. There's definitely some missing pieces that I think they would need to add. Obviously, Giacomo Brioni has been very good as of late. But historically, you know, him being a DP signing, I would say, hasn't exactly gone well. And even if you're going to keep someone like Giacomo Brioni, I do think there needs to be some depth at the striker position, just because Bobby Wood, or to put it, has a chronic knee injury and he's really struggled to make it on the field. You know, he'll make it on the bench occasionally, and, you know, he'll be able to kind of come off the bench and get, you know, minimal minutes. But it really seems like the Revolution could use another striker, whether that be kind of someone who can challenge Rioni for starts or just in general, just someone you can have come off the bench. And then it really seems like, according to, you know, recent reports, the Revolution are going to target kind of that defensive midfield position, you know, in the midfield. Obviously, you know, you have guys like Matt Polster, Ian Hartz, you have youngsters like Nobuck as well, too, Mark Anthony Kay as well. But it seems like they could use an upgrade at the position, especially, you know, with Caleb Porter's style of play. It's very important, and at times, you know, it just seems like opposing teams have been able to completely bypass the midfield as they go on their way to scoring goals. So it seems like that defensive midfield position is going to see some additions, and it'll be interesting to see, obviously, you know, with the Revolution's roster, how it is. Some guys will have to go out. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to, you know, veterans like Bobby Wood, Tommy McNamara, as well as, you know, some youngsters like Noel Buck. What is his career going to look like? Is he going to make the jump to England? So I really think this upcoming transfer window is going to be crucial in terms of the Revolution, you know, looking to continue to surge up the standings, or could they fall back down?
Now, let me ask you this. Is there a possibility of a reunion of a former Revolution player that may be in their sights to bring back, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
If you're talking about a certain goalkeeper who has been possibly rumored to make a return to MLS, I don't know. It's an interesting one just because of all his ability, but also the Revolution seem like you don't exactly need a goalkeeper. So it would be interesting, especially if Matt Turner was to return to MLS and go to a different club. But as much as I'd love to see it, and, you know, it would be great to see, I don't exactly know if it would happen if I got the right former Revolution player.
Wrong one, but you are
no, correct.
It is it. Yes, it is the goal-scoring department. I'm talking about Adam Buxa.
Ooh, yeah, I don't know. It would be really interesting. Obviously, there is those MLS rumors with Buxa, but he really seemed like someone who would want to kind of stay in Europe. And I think even if he was able to take almost a lesser deal, he would ideally stay in Europe if Adam Buxa is to come to MLS. So I do think that the Revolution have to go out and, you know, do as much as they can to get him. Because if you still somehow have Rioni and you're able to get Buxa, that would be quite a duo. But even if you're able to almost swap Rioni for Buxa, I would pretty much say that would be an upgrade.
No, absolutely. I agree with you there. We'll see what happens and what they do there in the summer transfer window for the Revolution to get back into the swing of things. But I guess you know, look, in your personal opinion, and if I'm repeating myself, I apologize, but was Caleb Porter dead and buried at the end of the year? Did you think he was going to survive this season and then they're going to let him go if they didn't make this turnaround the way they have so far?
Yeah, I mean, exactly as you put it, if, you know, the Revolution continue to lose games, if they finished, you know, at or near the bottom of the Eastern Conference, it seemed like, you know, his time would be up. You know, ideally it would probably be at the end of the season because just how MLS works, you don't have that promotion relegation where there's that pressure to make a change, you know, very quickly in terms to make sure you stay up and don't go down. But without that, it seemed like he would get the entire season at the minimum. So now I think things have changed. Obviously, if the Revolution are able to continue to perform and perform well, you know, get into the playoffs and then, you know, maybe even potentially make a run, it would be pretty hard to fire Caleb Porter. But if for some reason they revert back, then the question will arise again if he's going to keep his job or could the Revolution go another way heading into next season.
Very true, and we'll see what goes on here as this season continues on. And let's not forget, of course, Leagues Cup. Do you think they can make a run in Leagues Cup now with the way they've changed things up?
Yeah, I definitely think Leeds Cup will provide an interesting opportunity. You know, we've gotten some questions from our paid subscribers asking, you know, will Caleb Porter kind of go all out? And, you know, as much as I think the Leeds Cup is an interesting tournament, I don't exactly know if Caleb Porter will go all out. But if he's able to make a run and kind of get deep into the tournament, maybe even deeper than they were last year, that would definitely gloss over and really kind of make the overall image of the Revolution a lot more improved in terms of just being able to go deep in a tournament like that. If somehow they were able to win a trophy, I think that would, you know, ensure that Caleb Porter stays and, you know, definitely get some added time. But it's going to be interesting. I would probably say, I think it was the round of 16 they got knocked out, you know, the last tournament. Probably they have a good chance to get back there, but I don't know if they'll be able to get third there.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen there. But obviously, this is going to be a huge moment and a huge run for the New England Revolution as we get ready to see what they can do with the rest of this MLS season. And, of course, Leagues Cup just coming around the corner. As always, Sam, thank you very much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. Have a good evening, and I will talk to you next time. You take care.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you. And that is once again Sam Minton from the Blazing Musket as he joins
Record
us
your
tonight
message. When you
to
finish
talk
recording
about to talk about the New England Revolution and of course getting ready to have some fun here with what's going on with this turnaround, and we'll see what they do next time in their next matchup this upcoming weekend. Now, just waiting for my next guest to join me over there on the West Coast. He is, of course, the beat writer of the Portland Timbers for Cascadia FC. waiting for Jeremy Peterman to join me to get on the phone and have a conversation to talk about those Portland Timbers. And boy, oh boy, those Portland Timbers doing some good work here currently. At the moment, they are in sixth place in the Western Conference as we get ready to talk to him about those Timbers. Jeremy, good evening, and how are you?
Good evening, Daniel. It is a very, very warm day in Portland. The sun is out. And the Portland Timbers are on a six-game unbeaten streak, which is the second longest in the league at this current moment. Things are going really well.
That's fantastic to hear. So, okay, Phil Neville takes over the club, and right now, I know you had your negatives about him, but since he's taken over the club and now on a six-match unbeaten streak, what do you think about his head coaching prowess now?
Well, the one thing that Phil Neville has been able to do this season more than any other coach in the Timbers MLS history is get the most out of his designated players. And all offseason, heading into the lead up to the season, and then through the first couple months of the season, all Neville would talk about is how important your DPs are and how they are supposed to contribute and be the most valuable members of the team. And right now the Portland Timbers are the only team with three players who have more than eight goals each. And all three of those players are occupying DP slots. So he has done an incredible job of getting the most out of all of them. Felipe Mora, not actually a true DP. He's a DP for salary cap reasons. He can't be bought down. But he entered the season a little injured. He had a little bit of time to adjust, recover, get back into the team. And since he got back into the team, all he has done is score goals. That's huge. Last season, Evander was brought in. He had an interesting first season playing as both a 10, an 8, but still just adapting to MLS in his first year as what is, I guess that's kind of normal for most DPs in this league, trying to adapt to a new league, trying to see what they can do, what they can't do. But this season, he has been given complete freedom. And he has, in many ways, actually put together an MVP-caliber season this deep into June so far. He's averaging at least one goal contribution every game, be that a goal or an assist. And he has been at the heart of everything good that's going on in the attacking third. And then the third DP who was brought in just before the transfer window closed, for the winter, Jonathan Rodriguez, he has adapted really well. He's hit the ground running. Initially, it was thought that he was going to play as sort of a striker, but he's really locked down the left wing position. And since Neville has been able to get the most out of the highest paid players on the roster, it really sets up this summer as not so much a rebuilding summer, but a reloading summer. Like, how strong can we make this team? And how deep can this team push into the playoffs? Because right now they're in the playoff spots, which was something at the beginning of May looked very, very, very doubtful. But I have to give credit to Neville for being able to manage this team and fix the defense a little bit and just get the most out of the players who should be providing the most on the roster.
Now, 35 goals scored by the Portland Timbers, 25 of those combined, Felipe Mora with 9, both Evander and Mr. Jonathan Rodriguez have 8. It's amazing to see how quickly these three players have turned the Timbers around after the loss of so many great players like the Chara brothers, Sebastian, I forget his last name right now. I'm like, you know, you're tall, you know who I'm talking about.
Blanco.
Sebastian Blanco. Many, many great Timbers players. And these three have now come into play here and have replaced the goal scoring production. How important was it for these three to come up big the way they have so far?
Well, they have been, I would say the attack hinges upon all three of them being healthy, which is exactly what you want from your DPs. You want your DPs, when they're playing, to be the best players on the pitch. And every single time a new lineup comes out each week ahead of every game, you see Mora, Rodriguez, Evander, they're all in the lineup, and you know this team is going to be able to score goals. And they've built such an incredible chemistry with each other already, and they've kind of had to do it on the fly. Mora and Evander had a full year to get acquainted last year, and even so, it wasn't even a full year because Mora missed a good portion of time at the beginning of 2023. But Rodriguez, he's had to come in. He's had to adapt on the fly. This is, I believe, the 9th different team he has played on in his career in 6 different countries. And the fact that he's been able to come in immediately, keep in mind, when he was announced to the date of his first game, he didn't have a single training session. He walked right into the team, right into the starting lineup, and has just immediately gotten to work. And all three of those players have been leading by example. It's helped unite the locker room around them. And the ceiling for this Portland Timbers is just – for this Timbers team is basically how far those three players can take them. And it fills me with trust, because when you see these three players on the lineup every single week, you know there are going to be goals. And you know they're going to be coming. And the past couple of seasons, goal scoring has been a bit of an issue. And now, first season under a new coach, with Rodriguez still in the middle of his first season and Evander adapting really well to this league in his second season, it's just really, really, really comforting to see that the Portland Timbers are exciting and that they will score. And That's the best thing Neville could have hoped for.
Absolutely agree with you 100%. Now let's get to the goalkeeping situation. As you already know, Maxime Crépeau is currently with Canada in the Copa America, and he will have one more match to go, and hopefully, if they get a positive result there, he may be gone another game or two more, beating Peru, 10 men Peru, 1-0 there, made some two big saves for Canada. But during this run right now between Crépeau and who's your backup currently? Is it Trey Muse or is it Mr. James Pantemis? Who's being the backup right now and starting currently?
It's been Pantemis. Yeah, he's been excellent.
What has he done to give you confidence that obviously you're in this 6-match unbeaten streak, but what gives you the confidence that he's doing everything the correct way, that you're not missing Crépeau at all?
Well, it's very funny that you mention this, because there's kind of a debate surfacing among Timbers fans as to whether or not Crépeau should be starting when he gets back, because of how good Pantemis has been in his absence. I think that debate is completely ludicrous, but the most important thing about how Crépeau has been performing this year, because frankly, Crépeau has not had a great start to his Timbers career. And a lot of that can be blamed due to inconsistency in the team that's in front of him. Because as a goalkeeper, you can really only do so much. You can only stop the shots that are coming at you or take care of anything that's in your area. So there have been several occasions this season when Crépeau has pretty much been hung out to dry. But since Pantemis has taken over for this little stretch, he has seen the lineup in front of him has been very consistent. He's also been making all the saves. But Pantemis was signed to be a backup and make spot starts, which is exactly what he has been doing. I've talked to him on several occasions. He has no issue with being the team's backup and knowing that he'll get his chance when the moment comes. So I just think that Pantemis has done an unbelievable job of understanding his role and knowing that when his name is in the starting lineup, then it's time to go out and wow.
That's just fantastic to hear, and that's been really great to see that happening. How about what's been going on with this Cascadia matchups? Obviously, big win over Vancouver. I think your next couple of matches, I think you're going to be playing Vancouver back home, I believe it is, and then you're going to take on Seattle over at Providence Park. How has those matchups been in recent years up to this point?
So last season, Vancouver won the Cascadia Cup. And cool, they did it. That sometimes Vancouver wins the Cascadia Cup. It's okay. But this season, the most important thing in the rivalry was making sure that the Seattle Sounders did not win. Because prior to the May 12th meeting, where the Sounders did win 2-1, Portland had not lost to Seattle since August of 2021. And losing to Seattle is the worst thing that you can do as a Timbers team. You just cannot lose to your rivals, especially them. Neville got his first taste of the Cascadia rivalry in a wild 3-2 game against Vancouver, in Vancouver, when the Timbers were down 2-0 at halftime after some very, very, very boneheaded defensive mistakes doomed them. But then in the second half, they clawed back. They tied the game 2-2. Then a third goal from Vancouver, which ended up being the winner, found the back of the net after another bad defensive mistake. Then Alan Chapman, I think it was one of the first games that PRO referees were back after the strike or the work stoppage. Alan Chapman, fresh back. There was a incident in the Vancouver box late in the game. Looked like a penalty on replay. Chapman decides not to look at the monitor. It isn't recommended for review. And Vancouver wins 3-2. Then Seattle comes to town. They beat us 2-1 in a game that was very uninspired. I couldn't tell you a single highlight other than the goals. That's how dull that game was, because likewise, Seattle hasn't really been that good this year either. Certainly not exciting or thrilling in the way some people believe that they are. But that game was the wake-up call to Neville, because he's talked to supporters here. It's one of the things that he's prided himself on, that he will talk to the supporters, and he wants to understand what it means, not just to be a soccer coach in Portland, but to be the head coach of the Portland Timbers. And he keeps on reiterating that the fans say that it's unacceptable to lose to Vancouver and Seattle. And last weekend, the Timbers played the Whitecaps. They won 2-0, and it was a boring win. But after the season that the Timbers have had, a boring win is a very good win, because not for one second did it look like the Vancouver Whitecaps were going to win that game. And now the Timbers are officially back in the Cascadia race. They're only 4 points behind Vancouver, who has played one extra Cascadia game. And the last three rivalry matches of the season are going to be huge, because the Timbers are going to try and bring the Cascadia Cup back to Portland for the first time since 2022. I know it's only been 1 year, but I love having that trophy here.
Don't blame me at all. Don't blame it all. Jeremy, as always, thank you for joining me tonight. Hope you're going to have a great rest of the season. Good luck at League's Cup as well. And I will definitely talk to you this fall when the NFL season comes back.
Hopefully Rodgers will too.
Oh, yes, sir. Hopefully as well. Thanks again. Have a good night.
Yes, you too. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. Jeremy Peterman from Cascadia FC. He is the beat writer for the Portland Timbers. And now joining me tonight, we had two positives, and unfortunately, we got to go to a negative. From Philadelphia Soccer Now, my good friend Matt Ralph joining me to talk about the Philadelphia Union. Matt, good evening, and how are you?
Good. Good to be here. Interesting time in Philadelphia.
Yes, it is, unfortunately. Listen, I want to get to the crux of the matter here because apparently after the latest loss by the Philadelphia Union, Sons of Ben and probably other union supporters were chanting for Jay Sugarman to sell the team. Why has it gotten this bad?
Well, I think, you know, it's a combination of, you know, like most things, it's a combo. There were some, you know, Jonathan Tanwall of the Philadelphia Inquirer had done an interview with Jay Sugarman not too long ago, where, or at least it ran not too long ago, where he had some comments that upset fans about, you know, his willingness to invest in the team, and you know, just it just kind of struck a chord because it was more or less the message, whether it was intended or not, was like, you know, we're just going to kind of keep doing what we've been doing. And, you know, they, of course, got to within minutes of winning MLS Cup in 2022. And, you know, last year it was all about, you know, running it back. And you know, it was a disappointing, in the end, a disappointing season. And this year has just been really just not a great season so far. And so I think fans are a little bit fed up and wanted to see, you know, just a little more commitment from the ownership, and they haven't seen that. So, that's really the message is, you know, we don't really like the direction that things are heading. We're being told that, yeah, you know, this is, you know, Jim Curtin, the head coach, has said, you know, this is kind of who we have. Like, these are the players that we have, and we're going to have to figure it out, you know, with who we have. So yeah, I think the fans are really frustrated. Obviously, the performances haven't been there. You know, even early in the season when they were pulling out points and results, you know, you could tell that this team just wasn't the dominant team that it's been for so long. And, you know, I think that it's all sort of been a, you know, accumulation of, you know, underachieving, even pulling out results, but then, you know, the fact that they're not winning at home is both bizarre and it's frustrating for fans for sure.
I understand that. And, you know, I mean, I never thought I would see this in my entire life. And I don't mean to bring back a horror story, but the Union were up two men against Inter Miami. Miami had nine men on the pitch, two players on red card, sent off. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, that game-winning goal happened. That was shocking to me, and I never thought – not just that it's a Union team, but it's a Union team managed by Jim Curtin. I mean, that had to be the icing on the cake for how this season has gone for the Union.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, those of us who've been fans of the team for a long time remember, you know, and then not so – the before times where this team wasn't necessarily great at playing up a man. I mean, but in this case, it was up two men. It was just like, wait, what? How on the earth is this happening? I mean, to not win the game is one thing, but to lose and then to have a former academy player being the one who scored the goal was, especially hard to stomach.
It really is. I mean, I'm just baffled and astounded how this season has gone. And, you know, looking at the Eastern Conference for the first time in a very long time, the Union are in 11th place in the East. You're outside the playoff line. And you're only a point behind both Atlanta and Orlando, tied for ninth. and you're only four behind Toronto in eighth. I mean, what does Curtin need to do to change this whole thing around? But at the same time, I mean, what does the sporting director have to do to change things around to help Jim Curtin? Because, look, I don't think it's – this is definitely not all on Curtin's shoulders. I don't think it's all his fault. I mean, the sporting director's got to find a way during the summer window to bring in some players if possible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the – interestingly enough, you know, the Heat has been – you know, so much on Jay Sugarman, the majority owner, a little bit on Kevin Durant, you know, getting himself into some trouble online and then deleting responses on social media, you know, as one of the minority owners, but, you know, and certainly Jim Curtin. But, you know, it's been interesting that there hasn't been a lot of, you know, just, there hasn't been a lot of talk about Ernst. And it's, I think the situation is shared by a number of people, right, where, you know, there have been successive windows where players, you know, like Torres last year was acquired, like Perea were acquired, and, you know, either didn't play at all or barely played and then were sent out. And, you know, you've had, you know, multiple acquisitions of players now that haven't really seen the field. You know, Makhana, you know, the fact that, you know, this young South African was brought in and, you know, you're playing Nathan Harrell out of position instead of playing him, right? So, and, you know, Nathan didn't have a great game plan center back. So, you know, there's been, you know, a number of these situations where you see these players that have come in and they haven't made an impact, they haven't played. And, you know, that was really, you know, Tanner built sort of this great reputation on, you know, finding these gems like Kai Wagner, you know, more recently, like, Julian Carranza, whose departure is still pending, like, official, like, announcement, but, you know, who's heading to Europe, to Feyenoord, you know, these are big acquisitions. Jose Martinez, you know, big player acquisitions who, you know, everyone said who when they were acquired, and then we're like, wow, this is really turned out. So Daniel Gosdag, another one. And, you know, when you're seeing players come in, you know, Ty Burrivo, who, you know, has had a good, you know, two-game stretch where he scored a couple goals and, you know, played decently in the loss the other night, you know, you're starting to see some of that. But it is a situation where, you know, these players are being acquired and they're not really performing at the level of that's expected of players that are brought in under the radar. And that's contributing to it too, but also at the same time, I always like to say, like, you have to look at the opponents too. You have to look at some of the investment, some of the smarter decisions that other teams are making too. So, you know, the Union has kind of stayed a little bit stagnant, a little bit stale, and teams have figured them out. And I think in some ways have brought in, you know, made changes themselves with knowing, like, you know, where they need to be. And the Union setting that bar. And so I think they've gotten themselves a little bit in a situation where other teams have improved and they've really kind of stayed the same, but also the players that they have are, you know, they're a year older. You know, Ali Bedoya, he's currently injured. You know, he's you know, amazing player, you know, legend in pretty much everyone you talk to in the club history. You know, he's hurt now, but he's also, you know, reaching – you know, the point where he can't be an everyday player. And he's, you know, at that advanced part of his career. And so, you know, you see players, Andre Blake, really unfortunate season with injuries, you know, and hasn't been in the lineup. So I think there's a number of factors to that. But it is, you have to kind of look at the multiple reasons that this team is in the situation they're in right now.
How difficult have the injuries been, not just Bedoya, but Andre Blake as well?
You know, I think Andre Blake, you know, the initially, you know, I mean, you can't really underplay his importance. I mean, Jim Curtin has said repeatedly, you know, figure between 13 and 15 points a season that they gained by having him in goal over someone else. And, you know, and Semlo has been a good story. You know, he stepped in and showed some promise, but he's also struggled. And, you know, Andy Rick you know, the 18-year-old player, you know, young player who made his debut the other night. And, you know, nothing to really knock him on, but, you know, still, even a good performance from most goalkeepers in MLS still doesn't compare to what Andre Blake can do, you know, in terms of saving goals that no one else saves and really keeping really the confidence he gives his back line. And I think the back line in part has been a mess, and their confidence is a little bit shot because they don't quite feel like they do when they have Blake making just saves that, you know, you look over his career and how many goals would have been goals pretty much against any other keeper, you know, in the league. So I think that's been a really, maybe an under appreciated aspect of this struggling season this year, is that Blake has not been healthy and he hasn't been that rock in the back that they've had for so long.
Yeah, no, that's really difficult to hear, and it's really tough to see this happening. And, you know, it's just very unusual, Matt, to see the Union this low in the bottom of the – near the bottom of the Eastern Conference. And now you have to watch out for the New England Revolution. I mean, they're gaining now. They're only 3 points behind you. Excuse me, I shouldn't say that. They're a point behind you, and you're basically a point behind Orlando. I mean – What does the union need to do to turn these fortunes around? I mean, obviously, Gazdag is going to be remaining with Hungary in the round of 16. They've advanced because Italy saved themselves against Croatia and knocked them out. And, you know, being in third place in Group A for Hungary has kept Gazdag away from the Union for another match. I mean, what do you got to do?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of wanted you kind of had feel bad for Luka Modric, and obviously wanted Gazdag here back in Philadelphia. But, you know, I think, you know, you look at the two games they have coming up are huge games on the road. They've been better on the road than they've been at home, which is really weird to say for any team in MLS. But, you know, they need 6 points out of this week. They need, you know, the 3 points up in Montreal, the 3 points in Chicago on the 4th of July Eve to really, you know, kind of just steady things. I mean, it's going to be a long haul. And, you know, as we've talked about, we'll mention it a little bit, you know, MLS takes a month off, which is, to me, is still just insane that they do this. Take a month off the season because it's like, you know, for what, you know, for I consider it like a friendly cup, right? It's a cup, but it feels like friendlies. And, you know, after League Cup, whatever happens, it's kind of like, you know, I think the expectations are so low. Like, you know, maybe they can build some momentum and find a groove from League Cup and then return. And I think they can easily be in a situation where they're in a playoff hunt. And as we know, right, I mean, I always say, look at NYC, they want MLS Cup, right? You know, you've seen some of these teams that maybe didn't have great seasons, and they figured out how to get hot at the right time. And so, I mean, I don't want to be the one to say, like, hey, they have a shot, but they do. Every team has a shot in this league. And I think the trouble they're experiencing now, rather now than in September, right? So I think the reality of the situation is that the reason this is so surprising is that the Union have been so consistent in a league where this doesn't happen. You know, you have teams that literally win the league and then finish last place, like Toronto, right? So you have, you know, these teams that go up and down the standings are very inconsistent, and the Union just haven't been that team. And so I think they are in a little bit of a dry spell, and maybe, you know, this is a lost season. Maybe it's not, right? But I think, you know, the attention also needs to start looking toward, you know, how are they going to turn this around? Not short term, but also long term. What is the strategy? If the strategy continues to be, okay, we have a player who, like a player who's had a halfway decent season, and we're just going to sell them, then they're going to keep spinning their wheels. They need to kind of, you know, figure that out. And I know they've hung their hat on their academy, and that's great, but that's not really what the the fans want wins now. And so when they make the investment they've made in Kevin Sullivan and Bobby Vasquez, because, you know, 14-year-old and 18-year-old, and then they say, yeah, this is what we got, you know, I think there needs to be, you know, just there needs to be more than that. And so I think fans expect more. And, you know, it's going to be interesting just to see what long-term how this kind of stuff shakes out and, you know, what kind of moves on the field, you know, in the squad and also in the staff that might come out of this.
Absolutely. And hopefully they'll turn things around and we'll see what happens as this season goes along. Matt, as always, thanks for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. Have a good night. Hope you and your family are well, and I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Great. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure, Daniel. I appreciate everything you do.
All right. Thanks a lot. Matt Ralph, Philadelphia Soccer Now, joining me to talk about the current issues with the Philadelphia Union as they are in a very, very bad place currently. And they'll just have to wait and see when they're able to turn things around. So we'll have to wait and see when that situation does turn around for the Union, if it ever does this year. Now we're going to review the New York Rebels' two matches against the two Canadian teams. They were in Montreal midweek and at home against Toronto FC, first in Montreal. I thought while they were decently attacking, I really, really thought that this was going to be another game on the road where they laid an egg and it was a stinker. And they were down 2-0 in the first 45. Now, on the opening goal, yes, I know, bad defense from the guys. They did not clear the ball away properly and everything. But I still believed that the foul that was called on John Tolkien to set up the free kick for that opening goal by Montreal, I felt that was not a foul. I thought Tolkien got the ball. It was all ball. He did get a touch on the ball when he slid into it, and then the Montreal player just fell down in front of him and got the whistle for a foul. In my mind, was not. I felt it was not a foul. It should never have been called, but they did, and Montreal sadly converted, and the Red Bulls were looking a bit haphazard there and did not keep it out of their net. And then, of course, the second goal was a thing of beauty. O'Para was able to juke John Tolkien by a nice little cutback and then got a good shot on goal and beats Ryan Merritt to make it 2-0 Montreal. And I know Montreal is susceptible this year for allowing goals they should not allow at all. But I, you know, when the Red Bulls are playing these teams sometimes, and you know, there's some form of an advantage of some sort. I didn't think there was any. I really, really thought that Montreal was going to take the full 3 points, and the Red Bulls were going to get their fifth loss of the season, their fifth loss on the road. But that did not happen, as Wiki Carmona gets that big, important first goal to pull one back to make it 2-1. And then all of a sudden, magic and a miracle comes into play. Julian Hall, at the age of 16, subs into the match at Stade Saputo. They win a corner, get subbed in before the, you know, get subbed in, they win the corner, and then all of a sudden here comes Tolkien delivering the ball from the far corner right to Noah Ella, who heads it towards Corey Burke. Corey Burke with another flick header going into the middle, and there's Julian Hall right there with a push header to get the equalizer to make it 2-2. And even though they had a chance to get a third and unfortunately couldn't do it because the offside flag went up, yes, I know, he didn't take it well, Dante Van Zier, but once again, even if he did make contact, he was in an offside position. So complain all you want. If he did make contact and he did convert, it would have been wiped out for offside regardless. But for Julian Hall, at the age of 16, and the youngest 16-year-old to score a goal, his first MLS goal, beating both Jozy Altidore and Eddie Gavin, because he did it in 87 days, shorter than those two. That, my friends, is unbelievable. That, my friends, is history in the making. He is the second youngest player to score his first professional goal in Major League Soccer. Just ahead of him is Freddie Adu. But still, though, what Julian Hall did was unbelievable, and he deserves all the credit in the world to get that goal and to save a point. And hopefully he'll get more chances to put the ball in the back of the net when he subs in. He's not a starter yet, obviously. But right now, he's off and running, and it's a good start. It's a very good start for Julian Hall, and I'm happy for him. Congratulations to him. Of course, his parents happy for him that he was able to score his first professional goal in Major League Soccer. And then Saturday comes along. Here comes Toronto. Yes, another weather delay. And yes, it was only after 10 minutes were played. But still, it was an amazing game for the New York Red Bulls and how they were able to get this win. Not just without Emil Forsberg due to injury, but also without Lewis Morgan, who at the time was with Scotland. Now he'll be back with he'll be back from playing with Scotland as they got eliminated in the group stage in the Euros. Unfortunately for him, they could not get that necessary goal and get the necessary result to advance. But all I can say is that was a big win for the Red Bulls without those two big cogs in the attack, in Emil Forsberg and Lewis Morgan. Elise Manuel gets a great ball from Noah Ayla. And once again, it's Ayla. It's amazing what he has done as a center back. He finds a way to start a play. Whether he's lofting a ball down the pitch to Dante Van Zier in stride or a perfect through ball pass low to Manuel. Now, granted, it looked like it was going to Amaya, but he dummied the play. And Manuel just picks up the ball, makes a nice little turnaround, gets to the inside and the top of the area, and he just destroys the ball and beats Garvin and into the back of the net, roofs that sucker, 1-0 Red Bulls, and they go into halftime leading by that 1-0. And then Toronto falls apart, coughing up bad balls, bad passes, and the Red Bulls take advantage. Wiki Carmona, just, I would say, 1 to 2 minutes inside the start of the second half, goes and attacks down the far side. He's got three players going with him, and as soon as he gets close to the area on the far side, makes that nice diagonal pass low to the ground, and here comes Dennis Jengar. And he just slides in and bangs that ball into an open net to make it 2-0. His first MLS goal, first MLS goal for him. And it was unbelievable. It was awesome. 2-0 Red Bulls. Later on, Cameron Harper subs in. And then another turnover by Toronto. Red Bulls once again takes advantage. I believe that was Sean Nealis this time who gives the ball to Cameron Harper, goes wide, and then he curls in, and then he curls that ball inside the far post. Garvin basically knee buckler, could not do anything, and the New York Red Bulls win it by a final of 3-0. And amazingly enough for the New York Red Bulls, since this 2024 season got started, their home schedule, they have not lost a single game at home in their first 9 matches. That is unbelievable. 6 wins, 3 draws, no losses at home. All 4 losses this year have come on the road for the New York Red Bulls. They have looked strong. They have looked solid. They're, without a doubt, they have played some damn good football at home, some damn good soccer at home at Red Bull Arena, and they have looked strong and great. Their home record right now, they've played 9 games at home. They played 11 on the road. 20 overall. They have 9 wins, 7 draws, and 4 losses for 34 points, 34 goals for, and 25 goals against. At home, 9 matches played, 6 wins, 3 draws, no losses for 21 points. They have scored 18 times and have only allowed 5. If they did not allow an annoyance goal in against Charlotte at home, which should have been a clean sheet, that would have been 4. They beat FC Dallas 2-1. They blitzed Inter Miami 4-0. Unfortunately, a draw, scoreless draw against Chicago, a 1-1 draw against Vancouver, a 4-2 win over New England, the 3-1 win over Charlotte FC, the 1-0 win over Orlando City, the scoreless draw, their second scoreless draw at home, third of the season against Nashville, and then, of course, a 3-0 win over Toronto. And this weekend, it's Hate DC week right now. They're going to take on DC United before going on the road down south of the turn, taking the turnpike south to Philadelphia, and then flying cross country to take on the Colorado Rapids, and then come back for 2 home games against Montreal and then Cincinnati. And if you look at right now in the Eastern Conference, right now, Miami, yes, 41 points, first place. Right now, they're leading the Shield at this point in time. But the New York Red Bulls at the moment are in 6th place in the Shield standings, 3 points behind LAFC, Real Salt Lake, and the Galaxy. 5 points behind Cincinnati, who's in 2nd place. And I would say 9 points behind Inter Miami, who is right now leading the Shield at this current situation. But once again, in the Eastern Conference right now for the New York Red Bulls, they are in 3rd place in the East, doing well, with 34 points. Currently, Charlotte's behind them by 2. Columbus is behind them by 4. And New York City FC, who did jump over them briefly, is now fallen from 3rd to 6th. This is how close between 3rd and 7th right now, because Nashville's in 7th. This is how close the Eastern Conference race is currently right now. Can the Red Bulls catch up to Inter Miami? We'll have to wait and see. If they ever get into a lull, they just have to sit back and wait. But they can find a way to get to second place, and they're going to host FC Cincinnati once again, hosting FC Cincinnati on July the 20th before they move into their League Cup tournament schedule. Because they are going to be playing now against DC United at home this weekend. The following weekend, 4th of July weekend, they'll be in Philadelphia against the Union. Then they fly across the country to take on the Rapids. They come back to the East Coast and come back to Red Bull Arena to take on both Club de Foot Montreal and FC Cincinnati. Could they overtake Cincinnati before the League Cup tournament begins? We'll have to wait and see, and hopefully that's the case. But until then, we'll have to wait and see what the New York Red Bulls will do. But right now, they are looking pretty damn good. And it's amazing to see, and it's going to be fun to watch. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen there. So right now, once again, they're going to take on DC United over the weekend to finish up their calendar in June. And then we get ready for these next four matches in July before League's Cup comes back into play. I want to thank my guests tonight, Sam Minton of the Blazing Musket, Jeremy Peterman of Cascadia FC on the Portland Timbers, and Matt Ralph of Philadelphia Soccer Now. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for joining me tonight. And don't forget, this Thursday night, Copa America USA versus Panama post-game show, I'll be joined by James Burley of Fordham Sports, the sports broadcaster school of journalism major. He'll be joining me to talk about the USA taking on Panama. Once again, thank you for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care. So long, and have a good night. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a good night.